This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
what it will mean is that they're trying to move all these migrants and the camps set up around there out of Paris. They want to have them in smaller centres where they're far more easily, if you like, controlled.
That's reporter Catherine Field in Paris. Full details on the story coming up.
Also, President Jacob Zuma has been charged with 16 counts of fraud and corruption related to a 1990s arms deal. Human Rights Watch says the death toll from Kenya's election-related violence last year topped 100. And today, Egyptians living abroad begin 3 days of voting in the country's presidential election.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, South Africa's top prosecutor today charged former President Jacob Zuma with 16 counts of fraud and corruption related to a 1990s arms deal. Zuma's African National Congress Party forced him to resign as president last month. The prosecutor's office noted that Zuma has denied any wrong dealing in a case that involved about $2.5 billion worth of weaponry. Zuma has or was deputy president at the time. The National Prosecuting Authority originally charged him in the matter, but the case fell apart during his trial in 2006. In 2009, shortly before Zuma was elected president, the charges were dropped. Zuma's time in office was dogged with repeated allegations of corruption, eroding his support. Late last year, the ANC elected Cyril Ramaphosa as the party president, and pressure began to increase for Zuma to resign before national elections next year. Once Zuma left office, the party named Ramaphosa to finish his term.
Kenyan officials are warning people living in flood-prone areas to move to higher ground with more rain forecast after 2 weeks of downpours that has left more than 10 people dead. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Motorists in the Kenyan capital have been advised to be cautious because several roads have been inundated by the heavy rains. But the most damage has come in congested informal settlements where women and children are suffering the most. In the sprawling Mukuru slums, raging waters have forced many residents from their homes. Penina Mweni is a resident who has been idled because her tailor shop was swamped.
This is my business premise. I have arrived and found all materials and machines have been affected by waters. My friends are helping me to remove the waters. Their houses too have also been affected by floods, and they have removed theirs. There is no one in this area who has not been affected by these floods. This my business has been here for 8 years, but when we encounter heavy rains, it floods. But now, what will I do? I persevere and remove the waters.
Monica Akinyi, a college student, says her studies have been disrupted.
Reaching school early is so hard. Like, you take a lot of time before reaching school. Even going home takes a lot of time. And the floods. You can come when you're soaking wet. When you reach school, you're soaking wet and you're supposed to be in class. It's so hard. And to the Ministry of Water, they should not let this water go to waste, and then they're saying that you don't have water. It's not logical. Like, it's raining and this water is just going to waste, and in Nairobi there's no water, people are suffering. They should utilize it, should make the drainage system well because of these floodings. People are dying because of this flooding, people are getting hurt. It's not good.
With the Kenya Meteorological Department predicting more rain, officials are appealing to vulnerable residents to get out before it's too late. Paul Runo is an area chief of the Mukuru slums.
Basically, the floods, it has affected so many people, especially those who built their structures along the river. This is Gong River. It overfloods and it is coming up into, even to their houses. They were unable to sleep. Today we have never experienced such as a big rain as today. We don't know tomorrow whether it will come the same way. So we are appealing to them to move to safer grounds.
The Kenya Red Cross says the raging floods have swept away several people and affected about 1,000 households. Ruben Chama for VOA News, Nairobi.
Human Rights Watch says the death toll from Kenya's election-related violence last year topped 100. HRW and other rights groups say most of the victims were killed by police. The families of those killed are demanding justice, but say they don't know if their calls are being heard. Raya Lambor reports from Nairobi.
Brothers Victor and Bernard Okoth were in their early 20s when they were killed on August 9th during unrest sparked by results of the presidential runoff. Their mother, Bena Buluma, remembers the day.
Kaele nisema watu walikuwa nasema lazima utafute inatakana ukue na mboga chakula kwa nyumba.
She says because of the tensions, people were stockpiling food, so I woke up early to get some vegetables. Victor walked in and left his baby with her. Bernard was just from his house. Then she says, I heard them saying they were going to the main road. Police were already throwing tear gas. The family lives in Madhari, one of the informal settlements in Nairobi, where most people support the opposition. Bernard says there were gunshots. I never thought it would ever be my children. It was Bernard that I saw first. She says she lay on his body until it was taken away by the police. She later found Victor at the morgue. She says she saw bullet holes in both her sons. VOA met Bernard on the steps of Madhari Social Justice Center, where she had come to check on her son's case. Activist Kennedy Chindi works at the center, documenting and reporting police abuses.
During the August election, we documented 19 death cases in Madhare and Babadogo. The extrajudicial executions, they become more rampant during elections because the police take advantage.
The center says police gunned down 805 youth in Madhare and surrounding areas between 2013 and 2015. Most of the victims were young men aged 13 to 20. Madhare resident Sarah Wangari says police gunned down her son as he walked home with four friends on November 18th of last year.
Ili niuma sana sababu walifanya kitendo mbaya sana mtoto wa miaka 19 years.
She says it pains me because this was a 19-year-old and there were six police officers. Was it so hard to take him to a police station if he had done something wrong? She says his body was riddled with 10 bullet holes. With Chindi's help, she's disputing the official police report that said the young men were thieves and that her son had a gun. Bena recently provided testimony about the killing of her two sons to the Independent Police Oversight Authority, or IPOA, the government body tasked with investigating police abuses. She wants whoever shot her sons to answer for murder. Dennis Okech is the head of communications at IPOA.
IPOA got 63 cases between August and October election period. And we are at various stages of looking at those cases, investigating those cases. So far, we have terminated or closed at least two of those cases, which we have recommended to the Director of Public Prosecutions.
In those two cases, IPOA established the police clobber to death a six-month-old baby in a parent's house in Kisumu, and that a nine-year-old was shot by police while on a balcony of a family's house in Madhari. But IPOA said it could not determine the specific officers involved. Okech said investigations into other killings during the electoral period are at advanced stages.
A good number of them, around 20, are undergoing internal legal review. And after legal review, we'll be advancing them for the attention of the Director of Public Prosecutions.
But the families of the victims have their doubts. Okech told VOA that since IPOA was created in 2013, it has successfully completed 640 investigations. However, critics say IPOA's recommendations rarely lead to consequences for the police accused of abuses. On March 9th, President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga grasped hands and said they would work out their differences in the interests of the country. It was unexpected after the long and bitterly contentious election period. Bena worries her sons will be forgotten. She says, what kind of friendship is that? The first thing they would have said is that they want to talk about the loss of lives during the election period because people were killed and they know that many people were killed in different areas. Chidi, the activist in Madhari, says political reconciliation is impossible without justice.
There is so much worry among the victims and survivors, mostly of the extrajudicial executions, because most of them right now fail to understand how their fate will be. Because the two principles have come together and they are now forming some committees without putting in the interest of the victims and survivors. You know, they are going to negotiate the two of them without the interest of those who died for their cause.
He says the center will continue its work in Mathare, seeking justice for victims and their families. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. President Jacob Zuma has been charged with 16 counts of fraud and corruption related to a 1990s arms deal. And Human Rights Watch says the death toll from Kenya's election-related violence last year topped 100. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Today, Egyptians living abroad began 3 days of voting in the country's presidential election. Incumbent Abdel Fattah el-Sisi is expected to win against his only competition, Musa Mustafa Musa, the head of the Al-Gad party, who had previously endorsed Sisi's candidacy. This week, a group of Egyptian-Americans organized an Egypt Advocacy Day in the U.S. Congress to discuss challenges regarding the election. From Washington, reporter Mohammed El-Shanawi has the story.
Democratic Congressman Jim McGovern and some colleagues are drafting a resolution to address congressional concerns about the lack of fair and free elections in Egypt. McGovern, the co-chairman of Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission, says that while Egypt is a close U.S. strategic partner, there is a bipartisan concern in Congress over events leading up to the elections.
Recent developments, including the intimidation and detention of all credible opposition candidates and restrictions imposed on non-governmental groups and the media, are undermining the legitimacy and credibility of these elections. We cannot and we must not overlook actions and policies that reinforce authoritarian tendencies in Egypt and further weaken the rule of law.
Voting in Egypt runs from March 26th through the 28th. Sisi was elected president in 2014 after he led a military coup that ousted the first elected civilian president, Mohamed Morsi. Aya Hijazi is an Egyptian-American social advocate who was imprisoned in Egypt under false charges of child abuse. President Donald Trump negotiated her release during President El-Sisi's visit to Washington. She says Egyptian-Americans have a moral obligation to stand with fellow Egyptians and tell Congress and the administration about the government's efforts to suffocate political space in Egypt.
I think President Trump thinks that Sisi makes Egypt more secure. I know the president was really sympathetic personally to my case. There are thousands like me who are in the same situation, but that no one is speaking for them.
Although an eligible voter, Hijazi will not cast her ballot at the Egyptian embassy in Washington because she says, from her personal experience, she knows that Sisi is leading a brutal crackdown on civil society. Sahar Aziz is a professor of law at Rutgers University. She, too, is boycotting the Egyptian election.
I would feel compelled not to participate in these elections because I would be worried that it would legitimate a process that is unprecedentedly not giving everyone a fair opportunity to run for office. And that makes me concerned about the process from the beginning.
However, Michael Morgan, a doctor who also anchors a weekly television show on Egyptian issues, is inclined to vote for Sisi as a protector of the country's Christian minority.
As a Coptic Christian, I think we finally have a president that wants to make the Christians or the Copts feel that they're part of the country and be treated as an Egyptian.
Morgan acknowledges there are problems regarding human rights, but says the Sisi government faces many challenges, including security threats from militant groups. But Mukhtar Kamel, co-founder of a group called the Egyptian-American Alliance, says that does not justify forcing credible candidates out of the presidential race.
I will not be voting because I don't think there is a voting. There is a process. I'm not taking it seriously. Nobody is taking it seriously.
Kamel and some other Egyptian-Americans say voters have no real choice since Sisi's only rival previously had campaigned for a second term for the incumbent. He and other voters say they fear the next step after this election will be a vote in the Egyptian parliament to remove the constitutional term limit, allowing Sisi to become president for life. For VOA News, Mohammed El-Shinawi, Washington.
Authorities in Paris have announced they will close the largest reception center on the edge of the city, which was built in 2016. The center holds up to 450 migrants in emergency accommodation. In its place, Paris authorities will set up five smaller centers away from the city center. Reporter Catherine Field spoke with me about what this means for migrants and refugees.
What it will mean is that they're trying to move all these migrants and the camps set up around there out of Paris. They want to have them in smaller centres where they're far more easily, if you like, controlled. There they can make sure that they have their papers, they can try and get some sort of fix on who is in the country and what their needs are. Also, they want to stop this new encampment in that area of Paris that has come up alongside the reception centre that the Paris authorities have set up. They want that to go. They've been sending police through there on a regular basis, taking down people's tents, moving people on, moving people out. They want to clear that area, and they feel that while ever this huge 900 square metre reception centre is there, that people will go there, if not to go there to register, but to go there to get food.
And also they are going to be setting up five smaller centers, which will be away from the city center?
Yes, there are five centers that will be really completely different areas. One in the northwest, another down in the southeast, some right on the northeast edge of Paris. These new centers will be much smaller, but they're well out of the city center and well away from that area that has become such a magnet. It's difficult to see how they're going to do this because the reason that a lot of the migrants have gathered in that area is because it's very near to where the high-speed trains leave from Paris to go straight through to London. And that has always been that they've been in that area because they can, through one way or another, try and hop on these trains that once they leave the Paris station, these trains don't stop again until they're in the United Kingdom.
And what has been the reaction on the ground with this closing of the big reception center?
A lot of the NGOs are saying they're just moving the problem somewhere else and they fear it's going to be harder for them to help the migrants. And there's been large groups of NGOs going around providing food, some of them providing housing. They have this whole network set up of people who can take in a migrant just for a night, give them a bed. They feel now that they're being squeezed out, that they won't be able to offer these same possibilities if everyone's sort of scattered to the four corners of the Paris region, in fact.
In another matter, there were some protests earlier this week at the French Alps border police station due to a man who was helping an 8.5 months pregnant migrant and her husband and two children. Can you tell us more about this story?
What it was is there's a group called We're All Refugees, We're All Migrants, that provide help for migrants who come over the mountains, the snowy mountains from Italy, when they cross into France. They came across this family, saw that they're in complete distress, put them in the car, saw that the woman was very close to giving birth, and started driving her down to the local hospital. They came across a police roadblock. It was there that the woman started having contractions, started giving birth. She was then taken off to hospital in an ambulance. The man who actually was driving the car has now been questioned by police and faces a charge of transporting undocumented persons and bringing them into the country. He says, no, that wasn't what happened. He was helping people in distress. What the issue is here is that there is a continuing large number of people who are coming across the mountains, but who were then caught and sent back to Italy. On top of that, there is a problem that the police say, which is that the smugglers are really just providing help to these migrants just to get to the border, the French border. The police say that some of these NGOs are providing services to the smugglers, and that's what they're trying to crack down on.
That was reporter Catherine Field in Paris.
South Sudan's financial crisis has meant that some workers at its embassy in Washington, both diplomats and local hires, have not been paid for nearly a year. Maniok Lual, a South Sudanese American working at the embassy this week, told VOA's South Sudan in Focus he has not received his salary for 11 months. The administrator at the embassy, Dombeki Aikuol, declined to comment on Lual's allegation, saying he needs to contact officials at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation. Last year, the embassy's deputy head of mission told South Sudan in Focus the embassy uses visa fees to pay its employees. However, Lual says that is not accurate and that employees had not been paid since last March. Earlier this week, South Sudan paid employees at missions abroad for April and May 2017. Lual says local hires received only 1 month's pay. President Salva Kiir last week replaced his finance minister, saying the country needed a new economic plan because we have no money in our banks. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Rex Tillerson's first official visit to Africa was also his last. He was ousted as U.S. Secretary of State just hours after returning to Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump has tapped CIA Chief Mike Pompeo to replace Tillerson as America's top diplomat. Tillerson's trip to Africa focused largely on China's growing influence on the continent. An in-depth discussion on what his abrupt exit means for U.S.-Africa policy on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA.
voaafrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.
Africa.